Chapter 20 of Greengrey Homestead by Steele Rudd. This Legamous recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Read by Anna Simon. You'll have a son and heir now, as big Mrs. Brown, the nurse, will call your firstborn, and a feeling different to anything you ever experienced before will tingle through you, a feeling of pride of parenthood and family responsibility. A determination, too, to work your hardest and make money and become successful and provide Josie with a servant and give the youngster a good education and make a doctor or a lawyer or a governor of him and a credit to his country will take possession of you. And you'll be as glad when the time comes for big Mrs. Brown to roll up her paraphernalia and depart for her home as you were to land her whole and safe at the door of yours a month or so before, after propelling and bumping her in furious fashion over infamous roads in old Silas Sulky that he loaned you. For you'll be able to talk freely to Josie again, and be at liberty to admire and fondle the baby in your own way, and say the little things you want to say of it, and to it, and be your real self once more. And as you drop to your knees in prayerful attitude on the floor to get a close-up of the little red drowsy thing that's just dined like a leech and is resting on its back in its mother's lap, she'll smile upon it, and pucking his cheeks tenderly will croon, "Baby, baby." Then suddenly she'll call on you to look at it smiling, though you're gazing studiously at the helpless brat, even more studiously than you would at a new calf, you won't be sure that you noticed the smile. "Oh, yes, Dick, it did." Josie, puckering the pudgy cheeks some more with fingers and thumb, will proudly affirm. "There, there, now again, look, look, oh, look, Dick." "Oh, yes, I saw that time," you'll pleasantly lie. But not being endowed with the senses of a young mother, you can be forgiven for your blindness and discretion. But when Josie in her flights of rapture implores you to "give the dear little darling a kiss," a quivering at the back of your neck, and feeling of uncertainty as you spread out your hairy arms to grope for support as you lower your big head, will make you think you're taking a risk of colliding with it and committing murder. All the same, it will be a new and curious experience for you, kissing your son and heir, different in every way to kissing Josie herself for the first time, or for the 51st time. It will seem like starting out to manufacture an affection, and you won't thrill over it any more than if you had applied your lips to a protoplasm or blancmange. Next moment, though, as Josie's joy of motherhood increases, and she adjures you to kiss the little darling again, Richard, kiss its little legs, they're so sweet, giving the stumpy red limbs, which she'll expose purposely, a running fire of them, herself, you'll feel like a criminal that's recalled to receive a further sentence. When you were courting and made up your mind to ask her to be your wife, and she agreed to everything, you certainly didn't foresee that all this sort of stuff was to be included in the arrangement. Still, you'll be conscious that, after all, it's only one of the many duties never enumerated, one that comes only with fatherhood, the finishing touch to man's recreative skill. And so you'll console yourself in the knowledge that now you're a family man, you must take things as they come, the unpleasant with the pleasant, and you'll grin through and put up with them. "No, no, not little Dickie," Josie will presently protest. "Richard, we must always call him, dear. Not a nickname, like lots do." Then, bending over the son and heir, "Oh, you darling!" And she'll push one of its stubby feet into her mouth as if it was a lump of toffee. Starting to share Josie's passion for the bairn, your dull eyes will sparkle as you wonder how long it will be before he's running about and following me down the paddock. "But we mustn't let the little dear walk too soon, Richard," Josie will safeguard, covering the infant's nakedness lest the wind gets at it. "Mrs. Brown says that's why a lot of babies, and she never saw a better-shaped baby than this little darling, Richard, and it's the heaviest ever she's brought into the world. Why, a lot of them, Richard, grow up to be bandy-legged men. Their legs bend under them if they walk too soon, even when they're perfectly formed like this little dear's. And our little Richard," kissing the youngster again,
mustn't have bandy legs. No, 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 he mustn't, must he, ducky?
And she'll kiss it with greater energy. I wonder what he'll really be like, Josie, when he's a man, he'll enthuse, placing a hand lightly and proudly on the brat's head, the skull of which isn't unlike an egg with a soft shell. Looking at him now, you would hardly imagine him ever being different, would you?
Oh, yes, Richard, I can, for he's going to be very tall and awful clever, I'm sure. Mrs. Brown said he has a wonderful forehead for a first baby. No other baby that ever she knew had one like it. And we'll send him to school every day, Richard, and you'll go with him the first day to put his name down and tell the master to take care of him, and see the other boys don't hit him. And perhaps I'll go with him, too, and we'll get him all the best books that he'll want to pass his scholarship to the grammar. The Toowoomba grammar we'll send him to, Richard. It wouldn't be far to go to see him there, or for him to come home on vacation. They marry well who go to the Toowoomba grammar. So will Richard.
Here she'll laugh. I'll pick a good pony for him to ride, too, you'll put in, and make a great horseman of him, as well as a scholar. The foal that Bluebell has now will be the one for him. It's going to be a grey, and he'll be at its best as a five-year-old, just when this little nipper—
Oh, you mustn't start calling our darling a nipper, Richard, or you'll never get out of the way of it, Josie will interrupt. Always say Richard.
Richard, he'll repeat. But Hokey, he'll excitedly diverge. Did I tell you before, Josie, that they were both born on the same day, he and Bluebell's foal?
No, Richard, were they?
They were, and at the same hour.
Oh, poor little Bluebell, you never told me, and on the same day.
The same hour, he'll gush.
Then I hope you've been kind to her, Richard, she'll pause to reflect.
She's doing well, Josie, they both are, he'll assure her. She's been running on the range, where there's plenty of good grass and water, and if you saw the foal, you'd be surprised. A beauty, and races about the ridges out there like a young kangaroo. Gee, I wish this little coney here, placing your hand lightly again on your offspring's skull, could race like it. Then, removing your hand, you'll feel among the folds of its long white robe for a touch of its little red feet.
But I don't think we'll let Richard have much to do with horses, Richard. So many accidents happen. And look at all the boys, and men also, who have been killed off them. Oh, no, you precious little darling,
showering a fresh consignment of kisses on the sun and air.
It would never do to let you take any risks at all. Never, never, never.
Well, I don't suppose he'll ever do much milking, he'll meditate mercenarily.
Milking?
Josie'll almost choke.
Milking? What everyone can do. Such a beautiful darling in a dirty old milking yard, among a lot of dirty old cows. Oh, Richard, how could you think of it?
I wasn't thinking of it altogether, Josie, you'll shuffle clumsily. And I wouldn't have let you help me in the yard if I could have avoided it. Hanged if I would.
It doesn't matter about me, Richard,
Josie'll assure you bravely.
It's my duty to be where you are. But this little duck,
more kisses,
was given to us for something better than milking. Weren't you, little blue eyes?
And Josie will play with the dimpled cheeks again. Well, now, what do you reckon he'll be, Josie? He'll ask. What'll I say? Clergyman?
Oh, well, she'll hesitate. It would be wonderful, of course, for our Richard to be a clergyman, and for us too, but—
He'll grin meaningly and wait.
But I'd sooner see the little duck something different, so as he'll have the money and the position and the will and all that, Richard, to help the poor clergymen themselves to do what's right, and be a really great man, which he's going to be, Richard.
To be a shepherd of the shepherds, you mean, Josie, you'll grin.
Well, yes, Richard,
she'll agree, uncovering the brat's lower extremities again and planting fresh kisses on the soles of its feet. Then,
look, look at the little dear smiling again, Richard.
And when you'll have looked and nodded obligingly, she'll conclude,
for, of course, we want him to be good as well as clever, don't we, my beautiful, my precious,
"But I think a lawyer would be the best to make of him, Josie," you'll finally decide, rising to your feet from the hard boards and bending over them both with a wise air, and your hands behind your back. "That's what will make him."
"Oh, I think so too, Richard," Josie'll agree. "But it's a pity they are so common."
"How grand it'll be to see him standing there in the court," you'll enthuse. "A black silk gown hanging round him, and a white curly wig on his head, addressing the old judge and a jury, perhaps defending me in a row like the one I had with Tim Buckley over that block of land on the range."
"And winning the case for you too, Richard, for his father," Josie'll burst out. "How splendid! It'll be lovely, and I'm sure he will too."
"Yes, Josie," you'll warm up. "And I can see him and hear him addressing them now." Stretching out one of your arms and placing a foot on the end of the sofa in vain barristerial pose, "Subject to your honour's direction on the law relating to lands leased by the crown tenants, gentlemen of the jury, I say, and as sensible men you must agree with me, that the defendant, when he agreed to sublease this land to my client, he knowingly and wilfully—" Here Josie will interrupt again.
"Richard, Richard," she'll cry, "look at baby. You've made it sick. He's vomiting. Run for Mrs. Brown, Richard. Run."
But when you've recovered from the fright, you'll see little Richard, as you had often as a boy seen the baby in your own family, lying on his back, mildly puling. But your mother, who was hardened, took it calmly. Not being hardened, however, you won't feel as unconcerned over the puling Richard as your mother would. And in spite of yourself, you'll share Josie's fears. You'll show it by waving your arms and stamping your heavy feet and exclaiming, "Oh, poor little bloke! Turn him over, Josie, quick! Turn him, for it chokes him!" Then you'll smile again, and go to work for little Richard, and be a happy man ever after. The End. End of Green Grey Homestead by Steele Rudd. Read by Anna Simon. Nijmegen, 2019. For more information or to volunteer, please visit legamus.eu.